Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Well, this is it. Opening day of the World Cup. Don't worry, no spoiler alert. If you're into soccer, you probably did what I did today. You taped the Brazil-Croatia game to watch later this evening when you get home from work. Possibly, you'll even be taking some time off to watch the games, as I will be doing next week. And you know, just the fact that I can do that is pretty amazing, because now soccer in America is popular enough that I can watch every game on several major cable networks and even on broadcast TV. It's not like when I was a kid. Back then, I had to watch a snowy picture captured off my TV's UHF antenna, and the only station that carried the World Cup was the Spanish language station. On the plus side, I did pick up a bit of Spanish along the way. Pelota, ball. Campo, the field or the pitch. Penal, penalty kick. And of course, goal, which means goal, though it loses something in the translation. Anyway, now I can watch soccer in English, but this week I'm listening to music in Brazilian Portuguese, and we have another installment of Soundcheck's Guide to the Music of Brazil coming right up. We've also got live music in our studio from the band-slash-performance art troupe known as People Get Ready, and a visit from songwriter and actor Loudon Wainwright III. So, the World Cup got underway today in Brazil, and it began with a performance of this song. Everybody put your flags in the sky and do what you feel. It's your world, my world, our world today, and we invite the whole world to play. It's your world, my world, our world today, and we invite the whole world to play. Pitbull's We Are One may be an American confection, but it is the official song of the Brazil World Cup. We, however, are more interested in hearing some actual Brazilian music tonight, as we've been doing all this week on Soundcheck. And now we'll look at Brazil's indie and hip-hop scenes with Julia Forlan. Julia is a regular WNYC contributor, born in Brazil. She's also audio editor of the website BuzzFeed. And Julia, welcome back.
Hello, alô, alô.
So now, would it be silly of me to ask you, as someone born in Brazil, whether you're a soccer fan?
I think it would be kind of silly. Okay. I'm sure, but there are all kinds of Brazilians, man. I'm sure there are Brazilians, like, really into golf and lacrosse, too. Who knows? Uh-huh.
Like there are Americans who are not into baseball or
exactly,
football.
Exactly, okay. Exactly.
So what will you be listening for during the World Cup?
Oh, during the World Cup, I think the moments that really get me excited are when the crowd gets really excited. And I've been working on some, you know, World Cup related content, and just listening to these crowds like shouting their team songs, regardless of whether it's a team I actually root for, gets me really emotional.
You know, and this was one of the things with the last World Cup in South Africa, the din of the vuvuzelas, while neat in its own way, drowned out any of the soccer chants that fans have come to know and love.
Absolutely. That's why I'm very excited that they're, tamping down a little bit. And they have all kinds of really great instruments to celebrate the teams and team songs and whatnot.
Yeah,
so.
but now they're talking about banning the little rattle thing.
Yeah, so. But I mean, I feel like it's going to be really loud and really gorgeous no matter what happens. They can't ban clapping. They can't ban voices.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things that that you talked about last time you were on the show last year was that in São Paulo, where the opening ceremonies took place today, there is a thriving scene of kind of indie rock, of hip hop, of things that we might not necessarily associate with Brazilian music.
Absolutely. It's out there and it's bigger than I think people really imagine. And I'm very excited for so many foreigners to discover this music by, you know, through the World Cup or otherwise.
So you describe São Paulo as kind of a petri dish.
Oh, my gosh.
Of music. Why is that?
Absolutely. It's the various influences. São Paulo is a huge, huge city. There are immigrants from all over the world that have been there for generations.
How big a city?
It's 20 million people in the greater São Paulo.
Yeah, so like, you know, three times the size of New York.
Absolutely, and it's huge. I mean, in terms of the actual São Paulo city is much smaller, but you get on the airplane, and as you're landing, it's São Paulo for minutes, whole minutes of time, and skyscrapers full of people. And that means that people they have influences from their families, they have influences from school, and they're all on the internet. Brazilians are incredibly active online.
You've got Portuguese immigrants, but also Italian and German and Arabic and, of course, African, and all of that is in this melting pot.
Absolutely. I mean, I like a petri dish as an analogy because it's also incredibly experimental and alive and changing all the time.
Despite which, this first band that you've brought us will have a familiar sound to a lot of our listeners. Tell us about Aurora.
Aurora. It's a collaboration between two artists, Bárbara Eugênia, who I actually talked about when I was on here last time. She's coming to Summer Stage in New York this summer. And Xancas, who is actually, his name is Fernando Capi, but he goes by Xancas. And it's a really interesting collaboration because I like it as a representation of what Brazilian music is doing right now, because it was inspired by Bárbara Eugênia's love for the Beatles, recorded on reel-to-reel tape, and it's only being released on vinyl, and it's free online. So it really represents this, you know, and it sounds like a sort of like there's a country twang to it.
The song is "Don't Let It Slip Away" by this Brazilian duo called Aurora.
I think we cannot lose the magic and the innocence. Time for what exactly is time?
Echoes of "And I Love Her" by the Beatles.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Man,
yeah, you
don't let it slip away. Aurora, you say it.
Aurora.
I love the way you Brazilians change your R's into H's and D's as the whim suits, apparently.
It's secret. It's secret. We won't tell you.
the female singer, the name looks like Bárbara Eugênia, you say?
Bárbara Eugênia.
And she's going to be here in New York this summer.
Mm-hmm. All right. Summer Stage, yeah.
Now, you mentioned her last time you were on the show talking about the sort of indie rock scene in São Paulo. Of course, there's Rio, or Rio, as people in Rio pronounce it.
Very well. Very good.
Is there a kind of rivalry, a kind of East Coast, West Coast thing in between Rio and São Paulo?
You know, I feel like it's hard to say. I don't feel like that's exactly what's happening in terms of location, because a lot of this music is happening online and a lot of the meetings that are happening online. But one thing that is evident about the Rio-São Paulo difference is that Rio is where all of the old school music scene is housed. So it's where Globo is, which is Brazil's major broadcaster.
Right.
And so a lot of that, you know, like the songs that play in the telenovelas and a lot of that.
So is it like, you know, the indie rockers here where you want to get your song on a TV series? You know, is that what everyone is shooting for, to get on the telenovelas?
It'll make you. I mean, you can go from nobody to being huge if you're on a novella. However, you can also just explode on the internet and then that can blast you off to many different places.
Well, now, this next band that you've picked for us, and again, Julia Forlan sharing some Brazilian music with us on the day that the World Cup has begun in Brazil. This band is from Rio, called Baleia.
Baleia. Baleia means whale. And they have a lot of, I guess that their influences are, I mean, they remind me a little bit of American indie artists like the Toon Yards and, you know, Fleet Foxes. And in the sense that they're just, there's no end to their inspiration. There's no boundaries. There's no genres that are going to hold them back. So like in 2011, they got really popular playing Toxic or playing covers of
the Britney Spears song.
But it's a lush, gorgeous, huge jazz instrumentation where you don't even recognize what the song is until you're like a minute and a half into it. And so that kind of, I'd say, head trip where a Brazilian band is playing American music in a jazz style. They have a great version of a song by Dorival Caymmi with Radiohead, which I think is gorgeous. But the song that I love from their new album that just came out is called Casa, and I'm completely addicted to it. It's on repeat.
Era sonho, agora não. Da janela vejo luzes da cidade. Peso todo o desejo de um lugar nesse clarão. Como eles correm tão certinhos. Quanto a sorte rima com a morte. Mando um grito, mando um sinal.
Man, there's a little bit of everything in there.
Absolutely. They're, it seems like they are capable of playing every instrument. I don't even know how.
Baleia is the name of the band from Rio de Janeiro. The song is called Casa, which means home. Julia Forlan is with me, a regular WNYC contributor, audio editor at BuzzFeed, born in Brazil, and a soccer fan. And I mean, I think for all of us who are fans of other nations competing in the World Cup, you just can't hate Brazil.
I don't know. Somebody called them the Yankees of soccer.
Well,
and I understand where they're coming from, but like, this is
But the fans, the fans are so much fun to listen to as well as to watch.
Absolutely, I'm with you.
So, as far as you know, will any of these bands, are there like concerts? Are there festivals associated with the World Cup where people can actually see and hear these bands?
You know, there are lots of festivals that are constantly popping up. Like Baleia just played a street festival over the summer, the Brazilian summer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot going on, but the sense that I get is that things kind of stop. Like people want to, people want to watch soccer. They're not kidding around. They're
right.
Not.
this is business. This is the important stuff.
Absolutely, but there's music everywhere all the time.
And the World Cup is everywhere. It's in 12 different cities throughout what is an enormous country. And the band that you're going to introduce us to next is from, I don't even know how to say it. Is it Goiânia?
Goiânia.
Where is that?
Goiânia, it's in the interior of Brazil. It's, you know, it's one of those places that people talk about when they're talking about a remote place.
Uh-huh, right. This is this band called
Bugarins. And they are, to a certain extent, they really represent this dream of getting outside exposure for some Brazilian indie musicians. Their latest album is out by Other Music, which is a label here in New York.
Yeah,
and they have that blessing where they're getting to travel the world. They were in Columbus, Ohio. They've been in all kinds of cities in the United States. They played South By. So they have this one kind of indie dream, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. So this is from a fairly remote part of Brazil. Mm-hmm. They've become sort of globe-traveling musicians, this band called Bugarins, with a song called Eje. Psychedelia there.
Yeah, the Brazilians are very into that right now, I feel.
Bugarins is the name of the band.
There are these four guys that met in high school, and their first tracks they recorded in their parents' house. You know, and it has this very lush feeling, even though they were using, you know, whatever tools were available to them. So,
very similar to the trajectory, I guess, of many indie bands in Brooklyn.
Absolutely.
Except these guys come out of the state in Brazil, and they will be here in the city, in
New
York in August.
They will. They'll be here in August for the Seaport Music Festival. And I forgot to mention that Pitchfork reviewed their first album very positively, and I feel like that was sort of one of the things that set them in motion, that set them on this grand journey. So,
well, the grand journey of the World Cup begins today in Brazil, and we've been looking all this week at some of the music of Brazil. Julia Forlan is with us today on Soundcheck, audio editor at the website BuzzFeed, and a pretty regular contributor to our newsroom and occasionally here on Soundcheck. Now, this next band explicitly writes lyrics that you say present positive, strong examples of national identity.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a lot of Brazilian music is wound up in or bound up in ideas of nationality, of identity, especially in a melting pot immigrant culture.
But I think that it means something that Zulumbi, they put that on their... They come out with that, you know. They say, like, no, we're here to put positive images out there, especially for people in the hip-hop community, because, you know, there are lots of different kinds of hip-hop. There are lots of different kinds of funky. There are lots of different kinds of Brazilian music. But some of it's not so great for, you know, for women or for...
Or for children to listen to. I mean, when you say funk in Brazil, you don't mean like James Brown-style funk, right? That's a different thing.
No, I mean baile funk, which is a type of music that sprung up in the outskirts of Rio that is often, you know, there are all kinds of funky music, but... There's lots of it that is not super great in terms of the politics of how they introduce women. And, you know, it's a very complicated subject. And Zulumbi really wants to talk about things and talk about race and talk about culture in a way that's empowering to people, which reminds me a little bit of the, you know, some of the early mid-90s hip-hop movements like Tribe Called Quest. And they've got a lot of that sort of soul in it. But... they've got jazz in it. They've got African beats in it. So there's a lot going on in this beautiful arrangement of music.
O ritmo rolou tudo de bom, entre os tempos estavam íntimo. Mais um instante, já se tornaram amantes. Daí em diante, seguiram avante. Mais importante, a hora do levante já não tava distante, era gritante. Quase concreta, energia no ar. Várias vozes a fim de voar. Peito pra fora. Viro aqui agora, é o lugar e a hora. Então vamos embora, tanto faz demora.
It's a neat sound, the little gamelan sample at the beginning.
Isn't it
there.
Great? Isn't
Zulumbi great? Is the name of both the song and the band. What does that name mean, if anything?
I believe it's an African word, probably used in one of the Afro-Brazilian religions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so probably something from Candomblé or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Julia Forlan's been giving us a kind of quick overview of some of the indie music scene in Brazil today, and we're going to end with a song that has maybe at least an echo of one of the familiar styles of Brazilian music. You know, we think of samba, we think of bossa nova.
Absolutely.
And then there's this band called Cinco a Seco, which means five.
Okay, I did some research on this. Cinco a Seco is this very big Brazilian dry cleaning chain. I don't know why they're called Cinco a Seco. I couldn't figure it out.
I was going to say, five dry five. What does that mean?
Dry five. Cinco a Seco. You know, they're five guys from São Paulo. They've known each other for a long time. They're friends.
Are they bankrolled by this chain of laundromats?
No. I mean, and it's funny, this chain of the dry cleaning chain is in French. It's a French dry cleaning chain in Brazil. So, I mean, it just gets weirder.
Brazil is the host nation of the World Cup. There is tons of music, as we've been learning all this week on Soundcheck. We'll wrap up with this band, Cinco a Seco. And Julia Forlan, great to see you again.
Oh, it's my pleasure, John. Thank you so much for having me. Vai, Brasil!
Pensa num cara que anda feliz pra cachorro. Mas pensa assim num cachorro pra lá de feliz. Desde que te vi, que o chão não tem fundo, que o céu não tem forro, cantarola e morro. Copa do Mundo, o fim do segundo tempo da prorrogação. Desde que te vi, é farra pra tudo. Tem funk no morro do fundo do meu coração.
Stick around, because singer, songwriter, and Wainwright family patriarch Loudon Wainwright III is up next. He's got a new one-man show that he's performing here in Manhattan with a little help from his late dad. And he's got a new album due out in September. Loudon Wainwright III joins me to talk about both, and later we'll hear new songs from the kinetic rock band People Get Ready. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Loudon Wainwright III's last album, Older Than My Old Man Now, was a rueful, often funny meditation on aging and death, much of it inspired by his late father, Life magazine columnist and editor Loudon Wainwright Jr. Now, the younger Wainwright is taking things a step further with a new one-man show that he describes as a posthumous collaboration with his dad. It's called Surviving Twin, and it debuted at the West Side Theater here in New York on June 9th. Loudon Wainwright III joins me now in our Soundcheck studio. Welcome back.
Nice to be here.
So when Natalie Cole did her posthumous collaboration with Nat King Cole, that was pretty obvious, you know? There were tapes of him. She sang with those tapes.
Yeah.
How do you do a posthumous collaboration with your dad, whose records, so to speak, were written?
Yeah. Well, I perform his writing, his columns. He was a columnist. He wrote for Life magazine and had a column called The View from Here. Mm-hmm. And he died in 1988. At the age just shy of his 64th birthday. So when I hit 64, I find myself going back and rereading all his columns.
Yeah.
And enjoying them, and also being struck by the fact that there were some similarities in what interested us. We were covering some of the same waterfront. So it's a collaboration. It's posthumous because he's no longer with us. But I've taken his writing and combined and connected it with some of my songs.
Mm-hmm. And this is a process that has been going on for a while, right? I mean, the show is called Surviving Twin, and you did that song like 13, 14 years ago.
Right. Well, some of the songs in the show, I have a song called Dilated to Meet You, which is 40 years old. So I've taken older songs and some brand new songs, a couple of which are on my newest record, There's about 13 songs and about 7 of his written pieces.
Mm-hmm. Loudon Wainwright III's new album due out in September will be called Haven't Got the Blues Yet. But this song, Surviving Twin, from which the new show takes its name, is an older one. Let's hear it.
I needed to be big enough to be someone someday. And I learned I had to beat him, and that was the only way. I learned I had to fight in my own flesh, blood, bone, and kin. But I felt I was just like him. Can a man's son be his twin? First we fought for my mother, that afforded a little joy. When he left, she was heartbroken, and I was still their little boy. But I started to get bigger and to win the ugly game. When I made a little money and I got a bit of fame. And I saw how this could wound him. Yes, this could do the trick. And if I made it big enough, I could kill him off quick. But how can you murder someone in a way that they don't die? I didn't want to kill him. That would be suicide.
Rock and track.
As always, a little twist in the lyrics from Loudon Wainwright III and Surviving Twin. That was from Last Man on Earth back in 2001, but it's the name of the new one-man show, which is free every Monday night at the West Side Theater here in New York, every Monday night in June. Now, you are a dad.
Mm-hmm.
Do you hear Rufus or Martha or Lucy trying to kill you in the way that you're singing about in that song?
Well, in the Oedipal sense. I mean, I think every child needs to kill their parents.
Is that what you were singing about?
Yeah. I mean, that's what I meant. I mean, children have to, I certainly don't mean literally kill.
No, that's clear in the lyrics too. But, I got the impression that you were kind of fighting against this dominating figure who both in his private life and because of his public life cast a big shadow.
Well, that's true. But again, I think parents are big. They're giants. They're bigger than their kids. And I do believe I am old school enough to subscribe to Dr. Freud's ideas about that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there certainly I had an Oedipal struggle with my father. I cop to the fact that I've had an Oedipal struggle with my own kids too.
Mm-hmm.
I think it goes with the territory.
Soundcheck listeners, if you comb through our archives at soundcheck.org, you will find numerous visits here in the studio from Rufus Wainwright and Martha Wainwright and Lucy Wainwright Roach. But Loudon Wainwright III, the patriarch of the family, is here with me today. You want to give us a little piece of the show?
Sure, sure. My dad's father, Loudon I, died at a very young age. He was 43, so my father was only 17 when his father died.
Mm.
So I'll give you a little piece of a thing that he wrote called Life With and Without Father. If I remain still, if I am alone and silent long enough to hear the sound of my own blood or breathing or digestion, above the rustling of leaves and the whir of the refrigerator, my father is likely to turn up. He just arrives unbidden in the long-running film of my thoughts like Hitchcock in his pictures, and he looks for all these 40-plus years of disembodiment much like himself. Big and sandy-haired with freckles on the backs of his hands, perhaps a bit more diffident in the way he holds himself than I remember. He doesn't stay long, and as far as I can tell, his visits have no message. Yet even though years of therapy have led me to make the dark, whistling claim that he's finally dead and gone, my father, who died when I was 17, continues to be my principal ghost, a lifelong eminence grise, and only my own end will finish it.
That is Loudon Wainwright III and an excerpt from his one-man show, Surviving Twin, a collaboration, a posthumous collaboration with his own dad, Loudon Wainwright Jr., the Life magazine columnist and editor. Surviving Twin runs Monday nights in June here in New York at the West Side Theater. It is free. The Price is Right. A couple of things strike me about that. First of all, Loudon, you did that from memory, no notes. Mm-hmm. So you've memorized all of your the salient parts of your father's work.
Yeah, that's one of the short ones, too. I do two complete columns, which take about 10 to 12 minutes to do.
Yeah.
And I have memorized them.
So the other thing that struck me is, if you hadn't said the word 17 in that, you know, he was 17 when I died, that could easily have been you talking about your dad, it seems.
Yeah, yeah. And that's one of the things that makes it exciting for me to do it, because the stuff that I'm using in the show that he wrote, I think, totally applies to me.
Hmm.
And not just me specifically, to a lot of people.
Well, and your last album, I mean, we spoke a little bit about this the last time you were here. Older Than My Old Man Now is a mm-hmm. reference to you were 65 at the time, and your dad died just shy of 64?
Yeah, he was 4 days short of his 64th birthday. So, you know...
You won.
I did. I won. But I'm winning now in a different way, because by working together.
Right.
Oddly enough, I feel closer to my father now, and he's been dead for over 25 years, than I ever have.
Hmm. So that surviving twin thing about, you know, I'm talking about the song now, not the show, about, you know, fighting against your dad. I mean, the song comes to a kind of reasonable conclusion, which is that there is no winner in
right.
that fight.
Right. And that starts the show, that song, but it ends with another song called A Father and a Son, which is about, which also references the competitive aspect, but something gets resolved by the end of it.
So the songs that are new, that are going to be on the next record, haven't got the blues yet. Has your thinking about all of this evolved over the last couple of years? Is this a sort of a continuation of something you began in 01 with Surviving Twin, or have things taken a little different twist now?
The songs on the new record?
On the new record.
Well, the new record is I did Death and Decay on the last record.
Yes.
Now I'm doing Depression and Alternate Side of the Street Parking, I might add, which is a very New York thing.
Well, now that's another thing that struck me about some of these new songs is that, I'm a big fan of Talking Big Apple 75,
uh-huh.
A deep track of yours from the album T-Shirt.
Right.
Which sort of talks about New York City when it was just the last place on earth anyone would want to live.
Mm-hmm.
And how it's not boring.
That's right.
So there that kind of ambivalent relationship with the city where you have lived much of your life continues now and seems to have sprouted, you know, new leaves and branches on this record.
Yeah, I moved back to town and I've lived in a lot in New York, as you say, throughout my life. But we just came back about 3 years ago, and it's inspired several songs. The Alternate Side of the Street Parking song and the song about walking my dog in Riverside Park.
Now, what kind of dog do you have? Is he a big dog, little dog?
He's a special dog, John. I'd say he's about an 80-pounder.
That's a good-sized dog.
Yeah, he is. His name is Harry. He's a mix, a mutt. He has a lovely brindle coat, and he's getting a little gray in the muzzle. He's 11 years old.
Well, let's listen to the song, because it kind of talks about some of the problems and the joys of owning a dog in the city.
When a man has a dog in the city, a man needs to walk in the park. Take a little stroll by the riverside, smoke a cigarette there in the dark, living in the city. Man living with a dog. A man has to carry him a plastic bag on his person at all times. When a dog dumps on the sidewalk, walking away is a crime living in this city. Man walking with a dog.
Man walking. walking his dog in the city. The song is Man and Dog from my guest Loudon Wainwright III, who's with me here on Soundcheck. The album's due in September, called Haven't Got the Blues Yet. You know, Jerry Seinfeld once did a great old routine when he was doing stand-up about, you know, if aliens came to this planet and they saw one life form walking behind another life form with a plastic bag to scoop up the other life form's excrement, which one would you think was the dominant life form on this planet?
That's crazy.
So, you know, that kind of mix of emotions, that ambivalence, the mix of the comic and the poignant, that's been a part of your songwriting, it seems, from day one.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, when I started out, I guess my first record came out in 1970, and I think that was a kind of serious young man's angst-ridden record. But my next record had a song called Nice Jewish Girls on it, so the comedy started to creep in there.
Right.
And yeah, I'm...
And then, of course, there was Dead Skunk in the Middle of the Road.
Right.
And
I Wish I Was a Lesbian, you know.
Right.
Those are the comedy highlights. But... I like to think of myself as a switch hitter, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I write my song. I mean, I make records, but I really write them to construct these shows that I do, you know, my regular show, and to be able to alternate between the funny and the excruciatingly whatever or the serious is a good thing.
Well, when you're bearing your soul, as you often do in some of the songs, it is nice to shoot a little humor through
comic relief, they call that, yes.
So in the show, in your one-man show called Surviving Twin, do we get some of that side of it as well?
Well, there's some serious stuff, certainly, and then there's a piece called Disguising the Man, which is I do the complete column. It takes about 10 minutes, and it's about my father buying a London tailored suit in 1965 from a guy called Mr. Perry, the tailor. And that's, I would say that's kind of light and upbeat.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a nice moment in the show. But a lot of the show is well, I don't know if it's serious, but it's there are some actually in the show, I sing Man and Dog, the song we just heard some of, and then I do a piece that my father wrote called Another Sort of Love Story, and that's a complete column, but it's about having to put our dog John Henry down. And this was in 1972. The movie Love Story had come out in 1970 and was a huge you know, cultural phenomena. So he wrote this thing. I mean, I could give you a piece of that to show you how that's connected with the song.
Sure. Why don't you do that?
Well, that one starts. I can't do the whole thing
because
it takes a long time. So just raise your eyebrows when you want me to stop. But it starts, you know, I've just finished doing Man and Dog, and the audience have laughed.
Mm-hmm.
And I sit down, I put the guitar down, and I sit down, and I say, right in the middle of a long New Year's weekend full of bright weather on lovely snow and a numbing succession of televised quarterbacks, our dog died. Or to put it absolutely straight, after a family agreement rare in its unanimity, we had his life stopped by a veterinarian who agreed it was the right thing to do for such a painfully and fatally ill animal. His name was John Henry. I don't know why we called him that. I don't think I've ever been more sharply aware of the fine line between here and gone than I was near the end when I held him close on the vet's table. The kind doctor, her eyes floating in tears because she knew him and us pumped something bluish into his leg. And with the calm, open-eyed patience that characterized so much of his style, he waited that briefest moment until it struck his center and killed him. A couple of polite gasps, and it was over. Slightly undone by my sentiment, and for some wild reason remembering not Lassie but Love Story and the astounding communicative success of Eric Siegel, I will now risk a version of his opening question. What can you say about an 11-and-a-half-year-old dog that died? That he was at least as beautiful as Ally McGraw, and dumber, and a messier eater. That he ran shining and marvelously fast through fields and rolled snorting in snow and floated a burnt auburn blur over stone walls. that he didn't much mind Mozart and Bach, but that violin solos and harmonicas made him howl. That he could destroy 6 glasses with 1 sweep of his tail. That when I would ask him how he ranked me among the people he liked, he would thump his tail against the floor and grin, occasionally punctuating that with a noise that became a smell.
All right, so there are little streaks of humor in some of your dad's writing there.
Sure there are.
Loudon Wainwright III reciting a column written by his father, Loudon Wainwright Jr., the Life magazine columnist. That is part of Loudon Wainwright III's one-man show called Surviving Twin, a free show every Monday night in June at the West Side Theater and incorporating songs from Loudon's latest record, which is due in September, called Haven't Got the Blues Yet. Great to see you again.
Great to see you, John.
I haven't got the blues yet, but I am somewhat depressed. I own several pairs of shoes, should I choose to get dressed? When I wake up in the morning, life can't seem so unfair. Although my woman hasn't left me yet, and there's a cleaning lady there. I'm knocking back the Chardonnay, popping Zoloft too. Got a lot of free time.
Coming up, the Brooklyn dance enthusiasts turned indie rock band People Get Ready joins me in the studio with songs from their upcoming album, Physiques. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The Brooklyn band, known as People Get Ready, has built its reputation on live shows that blend a rock concert with performance art, with the musicians doubling as dancers and more. But with their forthcoming album called Physiques, the band is focused in on their sound, blending their very modern-sounding art pop with echoes of 1970s electronic music. The album comes out on June 24th, but we're going to hear some of it now, as the band People Get Ready has taken over our performance studio, and they're going to start us off with the title track from the album, Physiques, live on Soundcheck.
Among the riders, man, we move right down the line. I, for once, consider I am lost, but all roads lead up the line. And I call for the finest thing found, I am sure, along the line. And voices come to life the way I saw your face way past the line.
That's the band People Get Ready, live on Soundcheck with the title track of their forthcoming album, Physiques, live here in the Soundcheck studio. Let me introduce you to the four very busy members of People Get Ready, everybody doing double duty on that song. Stephen Recker on voice and guitar. Stephen, good to see you again.
Good to see you too.
James Rickman playing guitar, although at one point you had a bass slung over your other shoulder at the same time.
That's right.
Nice trick. Jen Goma singing and playing a stack of keyboards.
Double stack.
And Booker Stardrum behind a very unusual drum kit that Booker includes a sampler, right?
That's right.
What's on the sampler?
Samples. There's
samples. Thank you for that. So, Stephen, the idea of being here, even here in the confines of a radio studio, you sort of kick in and move in and stuff. You came to New York as a dancer, right?
Yeah, that was what I kind of moved here for. I joined a dance company and started dancing professionally for a while. All the while, I still played music, but that's what I did as a job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, David Byrne did that tour. I know you were a part of it, where he had the dancers actually playing music.
A little bit, yeah, yeah.
You know, the idea then of creating a group that accommodated both, was that part of the initial idea of People Get Ready?
Yeah, definitely from the get-go. It kind of grew out of a performance piece, actually, that was called People Get Ready. We had a show at the Kitchen. Yeah, we just kind of, I made this 20-minute piece, and Jen and a couple other people were involved, and then we just choreograph some stuff and use songs as the score.
We just choreograph some stuff. Jen, are you a dancer?
Sure. Yeah.
Why not? Yeah. Had you ever done dance before working with Stephen?
Oh yeah, I can. I brought clothes to move in.
So with this new record, though, I mean, this is a record, right? I mean,
yeah.
These are written as performance pieces as opposed to performance art pieces? Or do you not know that until you get out and do them?
I would say the record is actually just, songs. Just we were going to try to incorporate some of the sound elements that we develop when we make performance pieces, because a huge thing about what we do is creating massive sonic landscapes through movement, and we have a lot of examples of that. We're going to try to capture some of those sounds and put them on the record, but we just got so excited about the songs we were writing, we just ended up writing a record of songs.
And there are sounds of movement. I mean, we definitely didn't want to be confined to just, a studio, so we did a lot of moving mics around and trying to record in like different spaces.
Well, now, James, let me ask you about the main space in which this album was recorded. It was the old the Clock Tower Gallery, right?
The old Clock Tower Gallery, way downtown, and we were one of the very last guests of that space, I believe.
Yeah.
It was an incredible space, just to a whole floor of artists.
And so explain what the significance of recording there is. What is the Clock Tower Gallery now?
Jeez.
It's like condos, isn't it?
Unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, it's tragic. It was such a cool space, and we were on the 13th floor directly beneath the actual Clock Tower, and we were actually able to record some stuff in the sort of anteroom to the Clock Tower, which is hugely boomy sounding room.
And this is a place where, a lot of quote-unquote downtown art happened.
Yeah,
definitely. Back in the years when that scene was just coalescing in the
70s.
Alana
Heiss and Joe Ahern really kind of helped pioneer that space into becoming, a safe haven for so many artists.
Right. So, and the album was produced by Greg Saunier of Deerhoof.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so was it his idea or your idea to record there?
Well, something that we do a lot as a band is actually actively seek out residencies. So I knew Joe and we started having a dialogue about doing a show there or having a residency. And then all of a sudden the time for making a new record came up and I just hit Joe up and was like, we want to do this. And it was kind of unreal because we got unlimited access to the space, truly unlimited, for 2 months straight.
Wow.
So that was amazing.
Yeah. Okay. The results is the album called Physiques by the band People Get Ready. It comes out on June 24th. And the band is playing that evening in Brooklyn at Rough Trade to celebrate the release of the record. Let's hear another song. This one looks like a terrible, drastic misspelling of soon. It's got like 8 or 9 O's in it, so I'll call it soon. And here it is now from People Get Ready.
Yeah!
Once again, the band People Get Ready out of Brooklyn here in our Manhattan studio playing a song called Soon. First of all, you look at the title and you think, oh, it's kind of a jokey song. It's actually a kind of an ominous sounding
it's a
thing.
Little, yeah, it's a little dark.
And it also just reminds me of those Spanish language soccer announcers. Goal!
It's a soon. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So will you be watching the World Cup?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the bar I work at, we'll be playing it, so yeah.
So you'll be watching whether you want to or not. you were talking before, Stephen, about how, you know, in the making of this record, it just became an album of songs,
yeah.
You know, with divorced from all the performance art and stuff. Several of the songs, definitely to me at least, have echoes of that kind of 1970s Terry Riley, Kraftwerk, Tangerine Dream.
Absolutely, yeah.
Where's that coming from for you guys?
Oh, I think we all just have like a lot of disparate influences. And over that summer, I was listening to a lot of Suicide and a lot of the Bowie trilogy of like
Heroes.
And Lodger and stuff. And
yeah.
Kind of got a little obsessed with that process and reading about it. And yeah, I think that kind of definitely snuck in there, too.
The album is called Physiques. It is out on June 24th. The band will be playing that evening at Rough Trade in Brooklyn to celebrate the release of the new record. The band is People Get Ready, and it's been a lot of fun having you guys with us. Thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
Always interested to hear your feedback about this or any other episode of Soundcheck, you can leave us a message at 866-939-1612. That's 866-939-1612. Or send us an email, soundcheck@wnyc.org. Soundcheck is a production of WNYC. Irene Trudell leads our engineering team with Paul Schneider, Bill O'Neill, and Jason Isaac. The show is produced by Katie Bishop, Dan O'Donnell, and Mike Katziff with Amy Pearl. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. I'm John Schaefer. See you next time. This is Soundcheck.